You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 448 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you in separate locations again this week. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion, Storm.
And I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion, Seattle Seahawks. And it is the Super Bowl 48 champion edition of the Pelton Cast.
Always an exciting time every couple of years when it comes up. So here we are. There was a discussion, so spurred by your comments about Pete Carroll and his involvement in like the 10 most memorable moments in Seahawks history. That I don't know if you saw this discussion in Discord.
I did.
About how it was Mike Holmgren erasure, not to mention, obviously, the 80s.
I mean, I'm speaking from my own personal perspective. Like,
and then it got to a point where the discussion of what's the difference between a moment and a game, and how I consider the 2005, 2006, I don't know what year you call it, that NFC Championship game where the Seahawks advanced to the Super Bowl for the first time, that game itself is completely unmemorable to me. It's like the third most memorable game that happened that day.
I kind of remember celebrating. It was the whole thing, but like any specific moment. I think might have been drinking fairly heavily around that time.
But you vividly remember Kobe's 81, right?
Kobe's 81, Ray Allen hitting the three from deep, beating the Suns. I remember that better than I do the Seahawks game.
So that then segued into a discussion of then was Super Bowl 48 memorable because of the fact that the Seahawks won so easily? And I think the answer is yes, because of the Cam Chancellor hit on Demaryius Thomas, number one. That's like the moment of that game.
To me, I feel like the safety at the beginning of the game, that to me is like that, and then the Percy Harvin return.
The Percy Harvin cutoff return, yeah.
Because that basically, like, we were still a little stressed at halftime. We were feeling confident, but it was kind of like, don't be too confident.
Yeah, it was an appropriate fear.
And then that was kind of like, all right, this game's over.
And then Jermaine Kearse scored a touchdown and fulfilled your bold prediction.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a great time all around. But I would say not still as memorable as the NFC Championship game that year.
No, I totally agree. That's the number one most memorable moment in Seahawks history. Okay. That and the Beastquake are probably one and two. The tip and the Beastquake.
It's weird. Yeah, I mean, I think the comeback for against Green Bay is still pretty high up there in the championship game the next year.
People talk about how like there's recency bias in these things, and it's like, yeah, there is.
I mean,
most of the people having the conversation right now were there recently,
but
less of the people were there in the 80s.
Well, yes. But this is one of the things I unpacked is like, even if you look at the Holmgren era, like the single most memorable moment in a Mike Holmgren playoff game was Tony Romo's inability to catch a snap.
I do not agree with that. Because to me, the most memorable moment in a Mike Holmgren playoff game was, we want the ball and we're going to score.
Well, okay. The most memorable positive moment in a Mike Holmgren playoff. Because yes, obviously there are many flags in Super Bowl 40 that are quite memorable in their own right.
There's probably more. Like, there definitely are moments from other eras, but I wasn't saying it as like I went to the lab and I came back. That was more what I was just like, I'm just talking. You know what I mean?
No.
And it was kind of like,
there are times on this where you're not just talking.
Well, it wasn't like I sat down and I was like, I crunched the numbers and the 10 most memorable moments in Seahawks history came during the Pete Carroll era. It was.
Again, I reiterate my question. There are moments where you are doing that on this podcast. You crunched the numbers on the Ichiro era.
I actually have crunched those numbers, and it turned out I'm right.
I will grant you. Nate Silver did a post last week on the Baseball Hall of Fame with some alternative non-war metrics or non-career war metrics, and Ichiro did not do as well in many of those.
Hmm. Now I'm conflicted. Anyway, it was more of like an example of many of the most important moments in Seahawks history came under the Pete Carroll tenure, rather than it wasn't like precisely the top 10. Does that
How
make
many
sense?
Of the most
it's
memorable...
inarguable that many of the top 10 Seahawks moments happen. They won the only Super Bowl. They went to two of the three Super Bowls they went to. More playoff games. They played in more playoff games in the Pete Carroll era than they played in all other eras combined.
Correct.
So,
how many of the most memorable moments in Bears history do you think will come in the Pete Carroll era?
Hello. I was actually thinking it'd be in Raiders history because the NFC West, Andy Reid, Jim Harbaugh, Pete Carroll,
Sean Payton,
and Sean Payton.
That's actually the AFC West. I don't know.
Sorry, the AFC West. I don't know the NFC West.
That would be quite a combo.
Isn't that incredible? I mean, you're talking about four of, like, again, in fact, I'll say this definitively. I crunched numbers. The four most legendary coaches of all time.
Oh, wow. Bill Belichick bumped off the...
I mean, he's a freaking college coach. You know what I mean? Win something there. Pete Carroll has a national championship. What have you got, Bill? Kamora House ain't taking you all the way. Come on.
Maybe he will and maybe he won't.
It was like headline news on ESPN that they picked up a transfer. And I was like, the Huskies got a better transfer than this yesterday, dog. Get the fuck out of here, BB. Okay, I went back and rewatched. We should transition to this in a few minutes. I went back and rewatched highlights from UW versus Louisville, which, first off, that's how important of a game it was to me. That I just like turn. I was on the treadmill and I turned on YouTube and I was like, I'm just going to watch 16 minutes of highlights from this. And let me just tell you,
16 minutes.
If Steve Belichick had a different last, I was going to say, as thinking of this in the moment, and I was like, not any other last name, because there's other last names, some of them on the Jed Fish coaching staff that he could have had, or the Seahawks coaching staff that he could have had, and it would still be notable. But many other last names, Steve Belichick, he's closer to being fired than he is to being hired in another team.
I don't think that's true.
If you tip the scales, he's at 40%. He's like 60% to be fired, 40% to be hired somewhere else.
I do not agree with this assessment at all. I think that people were very high on Steve Belichick's performance this season. And also, I don't think you want, speaking of recency bias, I mean, I have been arguing all year that the Huskies defense was relatively overrated relative to their offense, but it was certainly better than the team that went to the fucking national championship game.
Was it better?
Oh, yeah.
By the end
Wasn't
of the year?
It?
I don't know. I'm gonna give that a fat old maybe.
They finished 46th in FPI efficiency this season. They were 30th last year. All right.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I was hoisted by my own petard there.
There you go.
Let's start that transition. First, before we get into it this week, you know, our thoughts are with everyone in LA, the scenes coming out of there, the images and videos, just horrifying, of the wildfires that are affecting a variety of the LA area and, you know, impacting across all walks of life, including certainly sports as well. So, you know, hope that firefighters are able to get those contained as the winds start to die down later in the week. All right, our first toast. Congrats to Bill Nye.
There we go.
Who was awarded the Presidential Medal of Honor by Joe Biden on Saturday. The only appropriate tribute for Speedwalker, given everything he did to help the Seattle community, including saving the kingdom.
That was huge. Big moment. No, that's kind of incredible. My favorite thing about Bill Nye is we're old enough to sort of remember him on Almost Live. I feel like we primarily, at least me, you're significantly older than I am. And
significantly, I mean, I think in the context of Almost Live, yes,
but no, you probably remember him from Almost Live slightly more than I do.
I mean, it's hard to separate, like, knowing him from Almost Live from everything that happened with Bill Nye the Science Guy afterwards.
My favorite thing that happens, though, is because kids still watch Bill Nye the Science Guy, like, it still happens in school. Teachers are still lazy. Now there's, you can have sick days and rainy days sometimes. And them discovering that Bill Nye is
from
Seattle.
Don't pull out the quote from this Pelton cast. Teachers are lazy.
That's, I clarified after.
The Pelton cast loves our teacher friends. Our hardworking and industrious teacher friends. Have I ever told you about the time?
Industrious?
I don't know why they'd be industrious necessarily. It just seemed like a nice thing to say. So the storm.
What I'm saying is I admire their community service.
I hope someone gets that joke. So the storm, when we first went independent, they sent us out occasionally to talk to students as a way of, like, you know, building the brand of the team. And, you know, we would talk about what it was like to work in pro sports. And one of my dear friends was talking about, you know, how many nights and weekends there were involved working in pro sports. And he was like, yeah, if you don't want to work nights and weekends, become a teacher.
Oh man.
But again,
They were
teachers.
like, we're gonna pound the pavement to let people know girls play basketball now too.
I
And
don't.
they were like, we know the person to do this. ESPN senior writer Kevin Pelton. Kids love him.
I wasn't ESPN senior writer Kevin Bowen yet. But look, I did not impugn teachers at any point during
That's
this.
good. That's good.
Again, I have great respect for the teaching profession.
I just love the idea that it's like, sorry, not ESPN senior writer. Proto ESPN senior writer Kevin Pelton. They're like, get him into the
You
classrooms.
could just say Kevin Pelton of stormbasketball.com.
There we go. Kevin Pelton of stormbasketball.com. He'll sway the kids.
Well, you know, I was much closer to it was much less about how do you do fellow kids back then.
Maybe you should have gone to Stanford.
Oh, you know, we didn't give Ben Baldwin. We have not mentioned, by the way, please listen to our Seahawks season in review, an off-season preview with Ben Baldwin that posted earlier this week. We did not give Ben the chance to defend Stanford on the pod.
Defend them from what? Factual information? I heard Stanford's moving to Texas because California's too woke. Anyway, sorry.
Don't think Stanford is moving to Texas.
Mean, all of the people who went there are. No, not actually. Mark Zuckerberg didn't go to Stanford. Come on. But they would consider it.
Did you have anything more on Bill Nye?
Oh, yeah, kids discovering that he's from Seattle. It's great. I want my kids to be, not I want, I've done this. I've already done the work. I
I mean,
don't have to
do you
aspire to.
remember Bill Nye doing videos on the Mariners for the Mariners in the early 90s?
Not really, no.
Okay, I definitely remember. That's like a memory I have that you apparently are too young to have.
I've been showing my kids Speedwalker since they were little, though.
That is true. I cannot question your commitment to Speedwalker.
So I want my children, I've done this work. I did the work already to be the kids telling other kids that Bill Nye's from Seattle.
There you go. All right, we're on a sad note. We're saying farewell to Jackson's Catfish Corner, which closed its doors last Friday. The original Catfish Corner opened in 1985 at the corner of M Cherry and MLK, operating there through 2014, with additional locations open through 2018. That original location, I think we've discussed on this podcast, is now Fats Chicken and Waffles. Then in 2021, Terrell Jackson, grandson of the original owners Woodrow and Rosemary, and relative of Steven Jackson, who used to get Catfish Corner delivered for the team after games at Key Arena, opened a new Catfish Corner at fittingly 23rd and Jackson in 2021, but decided to close up shop. So it's sad to see that go.
And I think we should also mention Flowers for You, which was closing, other Black-owned businesses, and Plum Bistro closing at the beginning of the year. So this wasn't just Catfish Corner. There are a number of Black-owned businesses. And I think it's important to remember that, you know, as time passes, to not forget the things that we've learned over these last handful of years and that we need to keep frequenting Black-owned businesses and local businesses as well. And that's something that is always a good reminder.
Without question. All right, in happier news, congrats to Devin Witherspoon, who was the Seahawks' lone player chosen for the Pro Bowl. Michael Dixon, Julian Love, Boye Mafe, Jackson Smith and Njigba, and Leonard Williams, who was objectively robbed, were all chosen as alternates.
Leonard Williams one was shocking to me. I mean, you look at all the individual players who made it, and you're like, yeah, they're all pretty good. But the
But you don't
amount
have anything negative to say about Georgia Eagles defender Jalen Carter?
I don't know enough. He was the one who I obviously was like, Leonard Williams outplayed Jalen Carter this year. I don't let me pull up something. I'll pull up PFF grades. Let's see. Jalen
I think Carter
Carter.
might have been slightly ahead in PFF grades. Certainly the, you know, production from a explosive play standpoint was not there. He had 4.5 sacks this season, 16 QB hits. I mean, Leonard Williams had what, double digits?
Yeah, his PFF grade was not great. I mean, unless Leonard Williams is worse, Jalen Carter is 22nd out of interior defensive linemen. But I'm really confident that Leonard Williams was higher.
I mean, Leonard Williams had 11 sacks. So a pretty monstrous season. Plus, of course, a 92-yard interception return touchdown. Can't take that away from him.
Leonard Williams, do you want to know what he ranked on? This is fucking bullshit, actually. Now that I look at it, I'm mad again. I was mad when I saw it at first. Jalen Carter, I literally do not know what he did. Leonard Williams, do you know what he ranked for interior defensive lineman by PFF?
Second?
Number four.
Okay.
That is a Pro Bowl player. And we talked about this. He should have been closer to defensive player of the year than he was to not making the Pro Bowl. That is an absurd thing that happened. I don't know who is ahead of him necessarily, but.
Who the top three were in PFF grades?
Yeah, I'm assuming they're all Pro Bowlers, probably. But
seems likely.
The year that Leonard Williams had, I do not know. What did Jalen Carter do to earn this reputation? Played for a good Georgia team? Like, it's kind of shocking. And I think people still look at the draft pick. Like, you would never question Devin Witherspoon, but I think people still feel like the Seahawks let Jalen Carter fall there, and it's like, great. I mean, it's nice to get the 22nd best interior defensive lineman with the 9th pick in the draft. That's a very nice pick for you. The Seahawks got Devin Witherspoon.
Deservedly a Pro Bowler. Jaxon Smith-Njigba had a great season. I think when you look at the four receivers who were chosen in the NFC, it's hard to make the case for him over those four guys. I think CeeDee Lamb might have been the one guy who was a little bit questionable, but he's probably in right about the right spot that he deserved to be in, and maybe has a chance to participate as some of those players pulled out.
I'm sure that I feel like most of these players will make it. Spoon was 19th by PFF, so.
Okay. Congrats to the winners of the PeltonCast Fantasy Football Leagues, which wrapped up in week 17 of the NFL season. That was Fantasy Genius Jimmer
Ugh.
In the Champions League.
Oh, God.
Much to your dismay.
Mine? Just mine.
Glenn Christie. I don't care if Jimmer wins. I just wanted to make the playoffs. And because I did have a better score, I believe, than him in both playoff weeks.
Wow. You hear that, Jimmer?
And somehow finished sixth because Zach Jabal unloaded like an enormous game on me in week 17. Glenn Christie in home of the Super Bowl 48 champs from across the pond, defeating third Pelton brother Ben Baldwin in the final. And then our cousin Kyle Moffitt in the home of the four-time WNBA champions. He defeated third Pelton brother Reese Lazarus in the final.
Oh, wow.
So Kyle did ask us if he was getting anything for this, if the winners were getting anything. That's
you got a brand new baby. That's not enough.
You got a shout out and congratulations on this pod. That's invaluable. TBD on that one, but if we do end up doing new PeltonCast merch this year, I think we will make sure that the PeltonCast fantasy football winners get some of that.
There we go. It's actually very fun having Jimmer in the league.
He won't be in our league next year,
though. I know, we won't know.
And Ben's going to be in the Champions League. I won't get to compete against him for the first time in a while. I don't know what we're going to do. I guess we'll just be in one league each next year. I don't know.
Let's rig it somehow.
Okay. And then last week this week, we're saying
it's a 14
farewell.
Team Champions League now.
Oh, wow. no more home sites. Lastly, this week, farewell to Storm legend Abby Bishop, a part of the 2010 championship team who announced her retirement after 19 years in the Australian WNBL. Bishop was WNBL MVP in 2015, won three league championships, also won a bronze playing alongside Lauren Jackson for Australia in 2012. So a terrific career for Abby Bishop. All right, actually, lastly this week, congrats to Demond Williams Jr., who in the Sun Bowl threw for the second most yards for any UW quarterback in a bowl game in program history in his second career start. Only Keith Price in that famous
Keith
Alamo
Price
Bowl.
Had to be, right?
Yeah.
Baylor.
Against RG3 and Baylor. That was the only game. I mean, some definitely, like, this wasn't that high scoring, but some definite similarities as the Huskies lose to Louisville 35-34 in one of the best feeling losses you could possibly have in a bowl game.
Oh, my God. Well, I think the difference is, right, what was Keith Price a senior when that game happened?
No, he was a sophomore, as a matter of fact.
Oh, was he really? Okay.
Yeah, because that it preceded the disappointing junior year, and then he had the strong senior year that was Sark's ticket to USC.
And eventually the college football playoffs. Somehow.
Ben Baldwin just learned that Sark left for USC.
I don't understand you could spend so much time focusing on the NFL. This is like I do not care about college football. Like you care about the NFL overall, generally, right? You're paying attention to most things. How you could not pay attention to college is so strange to me. Like, it's not that different of a sport. It's not like college basketball versus the NBA.
I mean,
like,
the Sark thing, I think you could have found out just by accident. I knew where Jackson Dart went to college.
No, no, you had it right.
You just were amazed that I didn't know more about where Jackson Dart went to college.
You didn't know it more confidently. This was, I don't know if I'm able to put into words just how excited I am about Damon Williams. Like, you heard me on, we did the Year in Review podcast before that game happened. I think it came out after.
Correct.
I want to
say.
We
released it on New Year's Day.
And the only thing that I would change about that is the Seattle sports person. Is that what we do?
Figure?
Okay. Figure.
Because remember, it's often concepts.
The Seattle sports figure / concept of the year. The only thing that I would have done differently is Damon Williams in those two starts that he had in 2024 is the person. And the other thing is I want to change all the rules around it to allow Damon Williams to get it every single year he's in college. Until the Seahawks draft Damon Williams. I'm
wow.
just
that,
watching
that's a bold
that
prediction.
Game. The thing about it was, so he starts off by throwing the Huskies get a stop right away. And I was watching the game kind of like, I'll check this out. You know what I mean? It was one of those things where it's kind of like, if I miss this game complete, I was supposed to be flying to Denver on the day that it happened, and that ended up not happening. And if I would have missed the game, I don't think I would have been devastated. So I was going into it.
I was splitting my attention between the Sun Bowl and UW women's basketball playing on New Year's Eve.
And so Damon throws the pick on the first series, the pick six on the first series, and I'm like, am I wrong? I really had a moment of like, is this the first time that I've ever been wrong about anything?
Am I out of touch?
No. And from that point forward, Damon didn't play a perfect game after that, but it was almost as close as you could get. Seeing the game that he had and some of these stats that he put up, I mean, who knows? It wasn't the Louisville's number one defense. They weren't an amazing defense, but it's not a bad team, right?
No.
The defense that was out there was probably a capable Big Ten team. And also the line that Damon was playing behind was not a capable Big Ten line. I truly could care less about the score of that game. It does not matter to me at all whether they won, whether they lost. One thing happened in that game, and that is Damon Williams announced that he is officially him. The numbers yep. are absurd from the start. 26-32, 374 passing yards, 4 touchdowns, plus a rushing touchdown on top. The 20 carries for 48 yards. I think he was only sacked 3 times, I want to say, by the end. Honestly, came pretty close to having a second rushing touchdown at the end of the game in a play that I still contend he broke the plane. But it was one of those performances where you're like, where did this person come from? And I think the thing to me that is most exciting about it is Damon Williams, who, when he came out of college, again, he was considered to be more or less like a pocket passer quarterback. And he's obviously a phenomenal runner. Damon, when plays break down, Damon, when he's not getting sacked.
I'm curious to go back to the tape because, I mean, I didn't see him, obviously, before the spring game. And, like, in the spring game, he was, like, running at every opportunity.
It's – I don't, that's just what I've read, basically.
But if you would have told me after watching that spring game that Damon Williams was going to complete over 70%, like substantially over 70% of his passes as a freshman, I mean, I wouldn't have known what to say.
You would have thought that he threw like 10 passes and they were all short passes. That's right. What you would have thought. You would have thought that's all he does. And that's not what Damon Williams does. They're not running like a college style offense for Damon Williams, where it's like flare here, flare there, all of this quick stuff. He was hitting these passes downfield, bombs, with incredible accuracy. So this season, because again, you take the profile of Damon Williams, 99% of the time, that quarterback has like a 50% completion percentage.
Exactly.
50 to 60%. Damon Williams has everything that all of these other quarterbacks have, that great running quarterbacks have, and a 78% completion percentage with really most of his games. He didn't get the benefit of playing against an early season non-conference schedule in there. There's no fluff. The games that he played were the second half against Penn fucking State, who could be in the national championship game tomorrow, at Oregon is his first ever start. Second half against UCLA, I think a deceptively maybe good UCLA team. At least one that he had to bail out a hole that Will Rogers had put them in. And against a good Louisville team in a bowl game. Like, Damon Williams had to do this against hard opponents and finish the season with a 78% completion percentage. Oh my God.
UCLA have better defense by FPI efficiency than UW.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they're, I don't even know who their defensive coordinator was, but.
I don't know either, because their previous defensive coordinator got hired by USC. So.
Anyway, his last name's not Belichick. So, plus the rushing on top of it, the 83 carries for 282 yards, like, and even a reception thrown in as well. This season that Damon had in such a short snippet was the only thing that I can compare it to is Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson rookie season, right? That is the only time that I have been this excited about a young player. I mean, basically, like, the Pantheon, like, recency bias warning, but, like, is Devin Witherspoon last year, where you're like, I just want to watch this person, right? Anything we do. Like, Devin Witherspoon in his rookie year, I was excited about every single thing that he did. It's Sean Alexander's rookie year. You remember that? Sean Alexander's rookie year, where we were just like, look, Ricky Waters. I want to see Sean Alexander.
Was it really Sean Alexander's rookie year or his second
maybe
year?
Maybe it was his second season.
I think he had like a big game at the end of the year, his rookie year, maybe.
That was at Husky Stadium, right?
I'm pretty sure it was.
Joey Galloway as a rookie, we were pretty excited about. Corn Robinson as a rookie. Honestly, beyond that, though, not that many more times have we seen anything like this.
You weren't around for Napoleon Kaufman's freshman year.
I mean, I was around. I was alive. But how good he played. And the thing about it, again, the thing that I keep coming back to is we could have been excited about him with a 60% completion percentage. But Damon playing the way that he did and being as accurate, because what that says to me is, yes, his accuracy is good, but that completion percentage is a combination of accuracy on throws, arm strength, and decision-making, right? And the decision-making that Damon had, he threw one pick all year. And it was in that first drive against Louisville where he didn't look very comfortable right away. And it's like, it took him a drive to get comfortable. And after that, he got very comfortable in that game. So I mean, we talked about what he did against Oregon on the road. That is not an easy thing to do. And the other quarterbacks, I don't know if you still have the stats up that we were looking at last weekend, but I was giddy after hearing them.
Yeah, we looked at quarterbacks who completed 70% of their passes as a freshman in college, which obviously Damon Williams was significantly north of, and then had, you know, I think it was like 2 yards per carry. So basically, like, if you're still getting positive rushing yards after in college, the sacks are being subtracted, like, you must be doing a fair bit as a rusher. And he was, I think, at the top of the list in completion percentage of those players, but there was a couple of other guys around him who were basically Heisman caliber players. Give me a second to pull those up. Napoleon Kaufman only had 67 carries as a freshman. I guess it was mostly did have 4 touchdowns in those 67 carries. So I guess it was, I'm even misremembering how excited we would have been about Napoleon Kaufman. It was his sophomore year that he broke out.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this is a unique situation for a quarterback. Bring up that list though, but also the types of quarterbacks that we're comparing him to are people I'm like, well, yeah, Will Howard shredded the Oregon defense. And I'm like, how many years has Will Howard been playing college football? It is not his second, his first ever start, right?
Right.
Going at that team behind a bad offensive line. Like, the tools, the other player, I think the Husky receivers were pretty good, but these are not, this wasn't the receiving core of last year, right?
I mean, Giles Jackson had the single best game of his career in the Sun Bowl. A career that he, obviously there was a lot more competition in the receiving room at that point, but a career that
Giles
included
Jackson
catching
a good
passes
a good
from Michael
receiver,
Penix Jr.
But it's not 3 NFL caliber receivers who were with him, 2 of whom who both had pretty good rookie years, one of whom it looks like, I mean, Jalen McMillan might be a Pro Bowler eventually, right? Jalen McMillan looks like maybe the best of those receivers. And Michael Penix had the benefit of all 3 of those players. We're talking at Damon. Like, this is kind of Damon doing it on his own. Jed Fish also scheming those players open as well. So,
I didn't realize this. I forgot to throw the freshman qualifier on here.
Okay.
So minimum 100 attempts, which is not very many, granted, compared to a lot of these quarterbacks. Minimum 2 yards per carry. Oh, I've got his 2 yards per reception. No wonder I
Yards per
was
reception.
wrong.
He does have 2 yards per reception, so.
Because it was like Bo Nix and Russell Wilson, but it was like their senior years. Remember, Bo Nix had the game where he scored a touchdown rushing, receiving, and passing, right?
I do not recall that.
No, you choose not to remember.
I mean, I actually don't recall it, but I do not recall that.
Look, I think we're kind of in on Bo Nix a little bit now.
Are
I
we?
don't know. I am. Consider me in on Bo Nix. Okay, this was freshman, 2 yards per carry, minimum 100 pass attempts, highest completion percentages. Damon Williams at 78,
Number one.
Kevin Hogan at Stanford at 72, and then if we're talking about Power Five players, Michael Penix Jr. is third at 69% at Indiana, Marcus Mariota is fourth.
Oh my God.
69% at Oregon. Colt McCoy, 68% at Texas. Johnny Manziel, 68% at Texas A&M. Deshaun Watson, 68% at Clemson. Sam Darnold, 67%. Or Spencer Rattler, I guess, is ahead of him at Oklahoma. Sam Darnold, Jameis Winston, and then someone named J.W. Walsh at Oklahoma State is the first like power conference player on this list. That didn't play in the NFL.
These are almost all
I
first
guess
round draft
Charlie
picks
Brewer at Baylor as well.
in the NFL, the types of players. And there's so many stats that you can look at. Again, it's small sample size. I don't know. But right now, the more that it keeps happening, you kind of have to feel like this is real. And the thing that I wanted to compare it to was there was a quarterback. I don't know if you're even aware. Did I tell you about this? Are you aware of this? There was a quarterback who committed to Oregon back in December.
And then went to Cal.
And then entered the transfer. I mean, he was committed to Cal beforehand. And then, so JKS, right? Committed to Oregon, saw that there were all these quarterbacks there, right? Which, again, I said this when the draft class or when the signing day happened. I was like, there's going to be attrition for these quarterbacks. I didn't expect that attrition to happen within the month or whatever. Fernando Mendoza transfers away from Cal, he transfers back to Cal. Many people were like, who knows? Quinn Ewers, maybe. I don't know. Many people in this moment were like, he got there, started practicing with the team before the Rose Bowl, and saw that Dante Moore was the guy. Let me tell you about Dante Moore's freshman season at UCLA. You never heard of him at UCLA. He's a very high recruit. Do you want to know what his completion percentage for his career is?
58.
If ever it were that high. 54.8 completion percentage for his career. That includes a 7 of 8 this year in garbage time. As a starting quarterback at UCLA, this is not a significantly different, I would say, talent-wise UCLA team. He started a bunch of games for them. I mean, he had way more attempts. 53.5% completion percentage. Rushing was negative. Negative 84 rushing yards on the year. This is the quarterback who people are like, one of all hate to them. One of the highest spending colleges in the country is not good. Highest spending colleges in the country are turning over their entire program to a 54% completion percentage quarterback. They are not even playing the same fucking game, Damon Williams and Dante Moore. If you were to take one of those quarterbacks, take pedigree is great. I understand. Maybe the arm talent. Damon Williams is a quarterback. Some of these numbers for Dante Moore, 22 of 44 against Wazoo. Maybe it was a pretty good Wazoo team. One touchdown, two picks. He also was playing against Coastal Carolina, San Diego State, North Carolina Central, 17 of 27 at San Diego State, 7 of 12 Coastal Carolina with a pick. Oregon at Oregon State, a 36-24 loss, 14 of 33 with three picks. I'm sorry. This is your freshman quarterback right now, Damon Williams. Again, Luka was saying some apocryphal things. I think he might have declared Damon Williams the second coming of Jesus in the game after the play that he had where everything broke down. A very Russell Wilson-like play that happened. You saw that and you're like, this little guy, this fast little guy with really good accuracy that's a little bit underrated? Who does he remind me of who's been underrated for his entire career and won a Super Bowl? Let's fucking go!
Russell Wilson didn't complete over 60% of his passes until he transferred to Wisconsin.
Oh, Better. Better. than Russell Wilson, is what you're telling me. I hear you. Hear you loud and clear.
That is what I'm telling you.
Oh my God.
I mean, I think
I just, another point of the podcast if you want.
Okay. The Demond cast.
I have never been I'm not even gonna, I don't know. I'm very excited about Damon Williams right now. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, I think the other point of comparison that came up during that game was to Russell Wilson's rookie season is, you know, Jed Fish came in with a very conservative game plan, a lot of running on first and second down, that sort of thing, which proved rather ineffective in this one. And then sort of realized, hey, the only way that we can be successful the way that Louisville is stacking the box is we gotta turn Damon Williams Jr. loose. And they never turned him off after that because he kept completing
Why would you?
Passes. So
what about the 7.8 QBR that Dante Moore had at UDOD? You like, this dude fucking sucks.
I don't know. I don't know anything about Dante Moore.
You never will. You'll see us beating him next year. You'll see Damon Williams.
Look, I know that Michael Penix Jr.
We need a name. We need a cup. Come on.
We do need a cup. I agree. Again, we have a name for it. It's the Taco Time Cup.
Well, you'll know all about him when we're storming the field a year from now. And you'll be in the stands. We'll wave to you.
You know what the Taco Time Cup should be filled with?
What's that?
Nugget ice.
There we go. That's pretty good.
Thank you. Thank you. Very proud of myself for that one. I don't know. I lost my train of thought where I was going with that. But yeah, you think back to Russell Wilson's rookie season, and he kind of was... The biggest obstacle for Russell Wilson in his rookie season was Pete Carroll's play calling.
Exposure.
And by the end of the year, the Seahawks, Pete Carroll had learned to trust him, and the offense took off and exploded, and again, didn't really stop until the Super Bowl 49 was canceled mysteriously with under a minute remaining. So I'm excited to see where this goes with Damon Williams Jr. as well. I mean, I think Russ, it was exciting because, you know, there was this concept, this guy can be our quarterback for 10 years, which, you know, I don't know what the actual number was, but it was close to that. And unfortunately, even with colleges, the NCAA's increasingly liberal definitions of eligibility, Damon Williams Jr. is not going to be the quarterback at UW for 10 years. But however long he is, I think it's going to be a very fun ride.
I'm just taking it day by day. I'm like, I hope he's the quarterback next year. That is where I'm at right now.
Right.
So... It was an incredible 3 days of, I think these happened, or no, maybe the Alabama game happened this on New Year's
Eve.
New
Year's. Yeah, I think it was also on New Year's Eve. Yeah, it was right before the Husky game.
What a 3 days, or 2 days, I guess.
It was also quite a time to record a podcast on December 30th, watch those two games. Granted, not that I watched the Alabama game. And then... Have the podcast come out
right
on January
about
1st.
Every single thing that I said. And I told you in that moment, I'm like, UW won. If you tell me right now, you can have, the trade is Damon Williams. I don't give a fuck who else, right? Damon Williams versus Kalen DeBoer. You know you're picking Damon Williams right now.
I mean, yes. Yes, I think I am. The other thing we should note here is that Jacob Banda's record 59th game for UW in the Sun Bowl, going back to, I don't know if he played for Chris Peterson, definitely played for the last three coaches. That's a pretty amazing career. It's been cool to see. I forget who it was who actually started this. Was it Drew Fowler who started this tradition of seniors posting their farewell to UW? Like they were transferring or declaring for the NFL draft,
even though
they're simply out of eligibility. And then, so it's been cool to see a number of players, these longtime UW players. Yeah. Banda's played two games in 2019. So he was part of the Chris Peterson, Jimmy Lake, Kalen DeBoer, and now Jed Fish eras. What a wild career for him.
Does Kaliki Latu possibly have another year of eligibility, or is that just now he's at Cal?
I think that's done.
Yeah. Wow, just 4 years at college. What a waste.
A short timer, indeed. I mean, there have been stranger things than guys getting injury waivers for six-game seasons, but have not heard any talk about Kaliki Latu coming back.
So that game happening, and then the very next day, I'm like, as the team from down south plays in the Rose Bowl. I'm like freaking giddy about this. I turn it on. It was kind of anticipating it. There's an incredible game that Arizona State played beforehand, right? And I think I
truly
have to
wild.
I was sort of wrong about Arizona State and definitely right about Texas. I just do not think Texas is that good of a team. And I also do not think Quinn Ewers is a very good quarterback. And I think the stats might agree with me about that. But the one thing that I said all season long was, I said this before the Husky game, we didn't have the roster for it this year, but the team from down south is beatable. And Ohio State showed they were not just beatable, they were crushable in that game when they were tooled up for everything. And to have that moment and have Ohio State shove them down and just be like, we're not in the same fucking ballpark. This is like Damon Williams and Dante Moore right now. We're not playing the same game. So having those three things happen back to back to back, what a freaking weekend it was. Somehow, despite the fact that the Huskies lost the Sun Bowl, the Huskies won the weekend. It was
without question. Without question.
And I love Jed just going for two, right? The play was there. It was a great defensive play. I'm like, I didn't care if we won. Didn't matter to me at all. The game was already won. The game was won way beforehand.
I think it was also a situation, like, if we actually want to talk seriously about that decision, it was a situation where clearly in this game, the offenses were ahead of the defenses. There's no time left on the clock, you know, or like a handful of seconds, because the Huskies did have a chance to onside kick.
Oh, which they probably should have gotten and had a chance.
Probably, yeah. It would have been very interesting had they recovered that. That is a situation where you absolutely should go for two. The questionable Jed Fish decision was not going for two down 14 when they scored. The math suggests that you should, because even if you miss, you have a chance to go for two again down 8 to tie the game. And the odds are you're going to complete at least one of those two-point conversions. You know, we went over this in the Discord. The actual percentage chance of victory that it changes to make that decision is very low, but it would have felt a little better had he made that decision.
It doesn't change my perspective about Jed Fish that he didn't, you know, like, it's different than a decision to not go for an obvious fourth down or something like that.
Which probably is a greater win probability swing, I think, a lot of those decisions.
I think on the whole, process wise, it's kind of frustrating because it's kind of like, it's all right there. The Lions did it, right? The Lions did it this last year and they rode it all the way to the number one seed. So the math is there for all of these decisions, and sticking with the math is there for all these decisions. And again, Dan Campbell, all credit to him. Like, he did it and was successful, and he would have done it whether he was unsuccessful. And I think that's the thing that,
I mean, he was notably unsuccessful on a fourth down, maybe two, in the NFC Championship game last year, and it hasn't caused him to get conservative yet. We'll see in this year's playoffs.
It is a little bit of like, this is the fucking Sun Bowl. You know what I mean? Like, you should probably just do the thing that the math says to do in this situation, because, again, like,
well, you should do the most fun thing. So if the math says the most fun thing, then you should do it.
Yes. But again, like, I thought the play call was right. The receiver was there. It was the 2-point conversion would have happened. Like, Damon threw a perfect pass. They just made a good play. And that's it. Again, I just can't. I've never seen a quarterback. I never in my entire life, even Lamar Jackson, anybody. Like, we could talk about any quarterback in the history of time. I have never seen a quarterback play like Damon Williams plays.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
I have never seen a quarterback who is that good of a runner, who is that accurate of a thrower and decision maker. I literally cannot think of anybody. And I mean, what you're talking about,
what you're saying is at that age, because Lamar Jackson is that level of a decision thrower now.
No, Lamar probably is. Okay, fine. Only Lamar Jackson. That's what we'll limit it to.
I mean, also, I think that if Patrick Mahomes wanted to be more of a running quarterback, he probably could do a lot of those same things.
Jets, eat your own. Get him out there. Crack dingers.
You don't think Patrick Mahomes could run more if he needed to?
He is a different type of runner than Damon Williams and Lamar Jackson are. You can't deny that. And I'm not saying that Damon Williams is the best quarterback I've ever seen, but Mahomes is a better quarterback. But the like package that Damon Williams has is different. And again, like, Dylan Raiola, he looks like Patrick Mahomes, but he doesn't complete passes like Patrick Mahomes. So
many of these players might do it in the future.
They might do it
exciting.
In the future, but he's doing it now. And the
Williams
number one
learned.
Thing that we know is it's easy to be good as a fifth-year player. It's easy.
I don't know that it's easy to be good as a fifth year player.
Many quarterbacks are good by the time they're seniors. And a lot of times that carries over. It carried over. Penix was good. That's the thing about Penix is Penix was actually under the radar very good. It was just injuries that derailed him. Had he stayed healthy, he probably would have been perceived in. He doesn't look like an NFL quarterback. Damon Williams doesn't necessarily look like an NFL
Mahomes ran for 456 yards and 10 touchdowns as a sophomore. Ran for 12 touchdowns as a junior. He ran for 22 in his last two seasons at Texas Tech.
They were scoring so many points. Fine. But you know that Mahomes is not a runner in the way that Damon Williams is.
I suppose.
Damon Williams, I mean, he had a lot of the carries when Will Rogers was starting, but he started two games all season and ended up with 83 carries.
I agree that his volume of carries is quite high.
That's also for better or worse, because he took a lot of sacks.
There were five sacks in the Sun Bowl for the record.
Oh, were there five? I thought it was maybe three for a while and went up. That's the thing. But he was playing behind a pretty bad offensive line, especially in the Sun Bowl.
And I think we did see some improvement over the course of that game in terms of his pocket awareness, which was also exciting to see. So. All right, well, let's...
Are we going to talk more? We're going to talk more about Husky football later.
Yeah, we still have the usual transfer updates, that sort of thing.
Okay.
All right, Mariners update. They have transacted.
Hello.
You've been waiting for it. They claimed right-handed reliever Hagen Danner off waivers from the Blue Jays on Wednesday. The Huntington Beach native made one appearance for the Blue Jays in 2023 before suffering a season-ending oblique strain, spent all of last year in the minors. He's a converted catcher who was drafted in the second round, both caught and pitched at the amateur level. And notably, he homered in the Little League World Series championship game as his team beat Japan 2-1.
Wow, that is notable.
All right, into the roundup. Seattle Kraken have lost their first three games in January, all at home. They're starting a five-game road trip Thursday at Columbus. And on Wednesday, they waived forward Daniel Sprong a month after acquiring him via trade. So Sprong
acquired him via trade.
Yes.
Goodbye, Sprong again.
Not the same lasting magical memories as Sprong's role in the 2023 playoff team. A run that does not seem likely to be repeated again in Seattle anytime soon. Seattle Sounders making a lot of news Wednesday. The Jesus Ferreira trade is finally completed. The Sounders will send up to $2.3 million in general allocation money in international spot. And winger Leo Chu to FC Dallas for Ferreira, who signed a new contract through 2029, reducing his salary from designated player territory to a lower figure. The Sounders will pay out that general allocation money in installments, starting with $1 million this year, $500K guaranteed in 2026, and the additional $800K is conditional, which facilitates the Sounders adding both Ferreira and FC Dallas teammate Paul Areola, another rumored target. GM Craig Weibel on Wednesday at a press conference said there would be more to share about Areola in 24 to 48 hours. So, sounds like that one is almost certainly happening too. But for now, let's keep our attention on Ferreira, who already has the second most goals in MLS history before age 25, behind Landon Donovan, and just turned 24 on Christmas Eve. So he's got a full season left to add to that tally. Ferreira was born in Colombia but moved to Dallas at age 10 because his dad, David, signed with FC Dallas midway through his own two-decade professional career. Really, his son was the lasting impact of that. The Sounders maybe need to start thinking about this, is who they can recruit as veteran international players to bring their children along with them. He debuted for FC Dallas in 2017 at age 16, became a full-time regular starting in 2019 at age 18, and broke out in 2022, scoring 18 goals to tie for fourth in MLS at age 21. Has also scored 15 goals and 23 caps for the U.S. men's national team, but is coming off his least productive season since the shortened 2020 campaign with just five goals, one of them from the spot, partially due to injuries. So Sounders betting on him kind of getting back to the form that we've previously seen in a new system. A lot of interchangeability between him and Jordan Morris in the attack is players who can play up front as primary goal scorers and also on the wing. And obviously you need a lot of ability to kind of, you know, to have cover for a variety of spots because the Sounders are going to be playing so many games this year with the FIFA Club World Cup, with the CONCACAF Champions Cup, potentially the Leagues Cup. There's going to be just a lot of matches for the Sounders. GM Craig Weibel also confirmed to Sounder at Hart Report that the Sounders have agreed to a new 2-year contract for Albert Rushnak, who will remain a designated player. Morris will become the third designated player alongside Pedro de la Vega after triggering incentives in his contract based on his goal and assist production over the last two seasons. And then Weibel said the next priority and presumably the last offseason addition after a potential Areola move would be adding a defender, presumably with the open U22/international spots that they have available. So
what I didn't realize was how much Damon Williams played at Iowa in that game, because that's all I can really talk about now.
Okay.
Do you know what his QBR was in that game?
It was 90 something, right?
99.1, 12-16 for 71 yards, and then also three carries and a touchdown, three carries for 23 yards.
Yeah. Yeah, he's really good. I will say there was obviously a lot of backups in that game.
Still, like, there are other quarterbacks who are in these situations and don't do as good.
It's true. All right, Seattle Reign also making moves. They signed North Carolina, the University of North Carolina winger Matty Dalian, who was a part of last year's national champs, who also played for the U.S. women's national team in the 2024 U20 World Cup that won bronze alongside the Reign's Emery Adames and Jordan Bug, playing a key role off the bench, and then signed Rutgers defender Emily Mason. You'll recall the NWSL did away with the college draft, so this is how these players now are entering the league coming out of college as free agents. Speaking of free agency, WNBA free agency is approaching for the Storm. Teams can apply the core designation and make qualifying offers starting Saturday. Probably no business for the Storm in that regard. Neko Gunke is out of core eligibility dating back to her time with the LA Sparks. Gabby Williams could be cored, and I think it would actually make a lot of sense to do so, but it was reported last summer before she re-signed with the Storm that she wanted interesting teams to agree not to core her, so she could be a fully unrestricted free agent this offseason. On Saturday, we recorded, in our annual tradition, the Her Hoop Stats mock offseason, where I served as Storm GM.
There we go.
Jewel Lloyd, Kelsey Plum was off the table in this one. She was staying in Las Vegas. So I traded Jewel Lloyd to Golden State for the number 5 pick in the 2025 draft, and then flipped that to Washington for 2-time All-Star guard Ariel Atkins, plus sharpshooting wing Carly Samuelson, and very promising limited minutes player Emily Engstler. So I was able to fill out the roster that way, and then re-sign Neka and Gabby Williams to put together a very strong top 7, top 8.
Nice. You're feeling good about that one?
I was, yeah. So
when do you think we'll have more clarity on, like, when does the offseason start? Is it starting right now? Is it,
so the negotiate, I mean, the Storm could make a trade now, realistically, you know, given the way that free agency and trades will kind of interact. You can start negotiating January 21st. Contracts can be signed starting February 1st. I would say I would be very surprised if we heard anything before January 21st, and possibly this plays out into February. Not too long. All right, sticking on the women's basketball front, UW women got their most impressive win of the year on New Year's Eve opposite the Sun Bowl at Illinois, a win that they got despite early foul trouble for Elle Ladine, who had just 6 points coming off 40 the game before, and then late foul trouble for Senator Tyra Eke. But Savia Sellers had 24 points and 8 assists, making 5 threes. Delia Daniels had 16 points and 12 boards, and the Huskies got 23 points from their struggling bench to complete a sweep of their first Big Ten road trip, beating a very good Illinois team, 84-75. Then they had a week off before returning to action at home and running their winning streak to 3 against Wisconsin, outscoring the Badgers 68-41 over the final three quarters of a 21-point win. Elledine led four scorers with at least 14 points by scoring 23. Daniels had another double-double with 17 points and 11 boards, and Sellers just missed one with 16 points, 9 assists, 6 boards. Before that win, the Huskies, one of the last four in, according to Bracketology from my ESPN colleague, Charlie Cream. So that Illinois win really crucial in terms of bolstering their NCAA tournament resume. Path gets harder this weekend as the Huskies travel to face a Michigan State team ranked number 20 in the AP poll, number 21 in the coaches poll. Spartans started 11-0, including wins over Cal and Vanderbilt in a Thanksgiving tournament and a 2-point win over Iowa in their Big Ten opener before losing their last two games of 2024 to Alabama and Maryland. They bounced back by blowing out Purdue on New Year's Day. They were hosting Nebraska on Wednesday. I did not get the score update on that one, so let me pull it up live as we do this
Wow.
one.
Okay.
This is what we're doing on this podcast. They lost this one at Nebraska 85-80. So
Okay.
a bit of a blow there to Michigan State, although that Nebraska team is also quite good. Moved to 3-2 in Big Ten play. It's an experienced Spartans team led by the front court duo of Julia Ayralt and Oregon transfer Grace Van Sluten, who have combined for 30 points per game and 15 rebounds per game this season.
And where do the Husky women rank in Bart Torvik right now?
They were 42nd last I checked.
Okay.
So right there on that bubble, I would
Yeah,
say.
confidently on the bubble.
Which is, look, just want to have, some reason to pay attention in early March would be a nice change of pace for either of the UW basketball programs.
What day do they play in Michigan State?
That is Sunday at Michigan State.
Okay.
So the UW men, you were there as they made me 0 for 1 on bold predictions in 2025 on January 2nd. Couldn't even make it a full 48 hours perfect on my bold predictions as they got their first ever Big Ten win, 75-69 over number 24, Maryland. What were your takeaways?
It was a great game. I actually, it was my favorite UW basketball game that I've been to since, I mean, years at this point. And it was comfortable to be there. It wasn't too full. So that was nice. I like that aspect of it. Got to sit up.
The players did not like that aspect of it as much.
It was funny because they were referencing after that they needed more crowds like that crowd.
Oh, really?
Because it got loud. Yeah, they were like, we need more crowds like the crowd against Maryland, which was funny because it was my favorite thing about it was at the beginning. It filled in quite a bit, actually. But we were sitting in the last row in the building in the end zone, section 5. You know, my favorite seating over there. Being there, like, again, Katie and I would back in the day used to go directly to those seats. We were just like, this is where we want to be. You could be in the last row. You could stay in the entire time. There is nothing the Pelton cast loves more than being in the last row.
100%.
So.
Or at least with no one behind you, because there's a lot of, like, the most recent UW men's basketball games I've been to, which has been a minute. Like, I wasn't necessarily in the last row, but there was no one behind me.
Yes. So. We were there, but you could hear every single thing that was happening on the court. So I was there with Mateo for his 8th birthday, and he took in none of this, of course. But I was like, can you hear how much talking there is? Because that to me is like the most interesting thing about seeing basketball that close. You could sort of hear it on TV, but like when there's nobody in the building, basketball is loud, right? The coaches are loud. The players are loud. How much everybody is talking during the game. I thought it was really interesting to hear just how clearly everybody was talking. And the Maryland team is very aggressive. It also, like, I'm more excited right now about Big Ten basketball than football. Because football, you look at it and you're like, the world is not all that different than it was, right? There's different teams that come through. There's a lot of the same teams. It's just such a smaller schedule. But you look at the UW basketball schedule at home and you're like, a lot of these games are fun, right?
I mean, they're hosting, not that this necessarily wasn't the case in the Pac-12, which often had a lot of draft prospects, but like it's not only ranked teams, but like many of the one and done prospects are coming to UW this season, including Derek Queen in that Maryland game.
There are so many good and interesting teams coming through, and it's fun seeing a team like Maryland, right? That's the type of game that if it was a non-conference, it would have been the signature non-conference game all season. And now it's just a conference game against a team with a program, with history, with good young players. I didn't know how Maryland played. So it was kind of interesting to see that. And it was a similar thing that we saw with Illinois after on Sunday, which was like, we're learning these teams by playing these games kind of for the first time, which I thought it was pretty fun to just kind of like see how these different teams play that we're not seeing that much. And unless you're paying that much attention to college basketball, you're probably not going to know that well. So
you are to men's college basketball as I am to college football.
No, that's what I'm saying. But also, there's no reason to watch college basketball. Like,
well,
college
the NBA draft is the reason.
I guess so. Fine. You have a professional reason to watch college basketball.
I mean, I think many people enjoy watching it from a draft standpoint without being paid for it.
It's just like, hey, do you want to see some of the best young stars in the league foul out?
Which Derek Queen did spend much of the night in foul trouble.
But I actually watched that game and I was like, I now understand what Derek Queen's like game looks like. You know,
it didn't look super great in that one. He had 4 points on 1 of 7 shooting in addition to the foul trouble.
Wow, it's only 1 of 7 shooting.
Just could not handle Wilhelm Breidenbach.
There we go. But also the amount that I paid attention to Husky basketball these two games. So, I mean, it was an incredible win. The crowd definitely showed up. I had already been a fan of Zoom Diallo, but after that game, I was like, I'm so in on Zoom Diallo. Right?
So it appears he has now chosen, he prefers to go by Vazumana Diallo, his birth name.
Okay, they said that over the PA address. Okay, fair enough. But so for Vazumana Diallo, that type of game that he had, finishing, shooting, like, it was awesome to see and definitely sparked the team overall. There was honestly, like, Louis Courtright making some huge plays. Louis Courtright had kind of the play of the game, getting a steal and then finishing on the other end. Free throw shooting was pretty solid overall. There were a few misses, but the free throw shooting, it looked like a different kind of Husky basketball team. And previously I'd felt like it was the same kind of Husky basketball team. And I think that was the thing that was most exciting about going to the game is what I would say. Here's how the kids would describe it. I think Danny Sprinkle low key kind of has aura.
Okay.
And I really like, I get it with the recruiting classes that he's bringing in and the players that he brought over. I understand. Great Osibor was somebody who he'd been with at so many different levels. It made a lot of sense. He spent the money, brought Great Osibor over. I don't know if Great Osibor is a Big Ten player. He's not a star Big Ten player.
He was a star in this game. 20 points, 14 boards, 8 of 12 shooting, did have 6 turnovers.
I think if he's your third best player, that's a very good team.
Well,
I don't know if he could carry a team in the Big Ten the way that he could in, were they in the Mountain West before? It's a little bit easier with his size and his skill set in the Mountain West than it is in the Big Ten. And I think that's kind of something that the Huskies are running into right now. But that's also something that Danny Sprinkle is learning. We'll see about, I don't know if there's any update on Frank Kepnong.
Didn't sound real positive.
Okay. And there were a couple times where it's like, man, they really needed Frank. Like when they were going to, what is it, Casey Ebekwe, who like honestly had some pretty good minutes hitting the free throws. I don't know. Were you watching when he shot these? It was incredible seeing Ebekwe shoot free throws. Because he went to the line, and I was like, "There's no way he's hitting these free throws." And then he had a pair of oh my god, what's it called? 1-on-1s, and hit the front end of both. And I was like, "Honestly, did your job. Like that is good enough.
I'll take it. Yeah,
to get those 2 points."
What did Buckway shoot from the free throw line last year? I remember it was bad enough that I noted it when he transferred here. 42%.
I mean, he got up there, like I saw him and I was like, this is probably not a good free throw shooter. And then he shot the free throw. It was like sailed high in the air and floated in. And I was like, you know what? Okay, fair enough. They were important points. So I thought it was great overall. And I definitely was way more in for Sunday. Like my whole outlook on Husky basketball, and I think everybody should be, is different after the Maryland win.
And
it's especially different. It's especially different. After that's a good Big Ten team,
without question. No, I mean, it's a great win. I like that the Huskies were able to hold Maryland to 11 3-point attempts in this one. I mean, their 3-point defense has been a big factor in their opening weekend of real Big Ten play,
but it's becoming a trend now. It's something that it's happened a couple times.
Everything becomes a trend until it isn't. Time is the greatest hater.
time is the greatest hater. Are we gonna trademark that?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know if we can, but we should. 18 for Diallo in this one. DJ Davis, also coming off the bench, scored 17.
I love DJ Davis.
All right, so now let's talk about the Illinois game. They were down 27-10 midway through the first half on Sunday against Illinois, an Illinois team that had just come off beating number 9 Oregon in Eugene.
Overrated. I've looked at the KenPom. Overrated.
They are, in fact, overrated.
Yeah, they're...
Huskies were still down 13 midway through the second half, but then rallied to tie the game at 75 seconds, at 75 with 47 seconds left.
Illinois just gave him 2 points to tie the game.
On another Louis Courtright steal and layup.
Yeah, we're gonna call it a steal. Were you watching? Did you see this?
I was watching. I
Illinois
can't
just.
remember the play anymore.
You can't remember the play? It was where Illinois just threw it down court. Louis Courtright went and scooped it up and laid it in. They just missed the pass inbounds, and it was like we were down two, and I was like, Illinois was scoring at the rim at will. The
Yes.
Huskies had it to 2 points, and I was like, they're going to score here, which eventually ended up happening. But
Yes.
they were scoring at the rim so comfortably, and I was like, oh, it's gonna be four, we're gonna lose. And then they just threw the ball, and Louis Courtright scooped it up and laid it up, and I was like, wow.
It was
Being
quite a
tied
moment.
is a very different situation. Like that was a lucky one, but in the end, Illinois was just able to score at the basket way too easily.
Well, specifically Kasperis Jakachonis, who is looking like a top 10 pick in
A
the
freshman?
2025 NBA
Was that
draft.
right?
Yeah, one and done in all likelihood. Made the go-ahead layup, then he made two free throws to make it a two-possession game after the Huskies were unable to score. Jakachonis had 18 points and six assists. Kind of a wild box score for the Huskies. No starter scored double figures, with Osabor going for 9 points on 2 of 8 shooting, did have four steals. But then DJ Davis comes off the bench to make seven threes and score 31 points, both career highs.
I love it. Shooter's gonna shoot.
The shooters did not shoot for Illinois, which made 14 threes in the upset of Oregon, shot 5 of 26 on
Like,
threes
can we
in this one.
quote upset? They're a better team by every metric.
Well, they were still on the road. I'm sure KenPom had Oregon favored in that game.
In front of 800 strong in Eugene. They're loud. They're loud 800.
You think it was actually 800?
No, that's they always have the smallest buildings. They're like, every game sold out. We had 2,200 there. Come on.
I mean, it's not like they're playing in a WNBA arena, one of these WNBA arenas that only seat 4,000 that are they have to move the games when Caitlin Clark comes to town. Matt Court is, I don't think Matt Knight Court is substantially different in terms of size from Hackett.
Fine, just let me have this.
I'm not letting you do this, Hayden. I'm
Wow.
sorry, I sure changed them. They made 16 threes at Oregon, beat them by 32 points.
Shooters go and shoot, haters go and hate. If you think
But
I hadn't looked up that KenPom for that team, I have 26 or something. They should be on the bubble. Anyway,
hold on, let me. Well, it got substantially worse because they lost that game. Going in, it was much better. Oregon was favored to win 65% of the time by KenPom going in.
okay. Bad loss for them. But I do think so. Illinois ended up shooting 5-26 in that game. And I think Illinois is the number one 3-point shooting team in terms of attempts in the country. Is that right?
Hold on, I'm looking up the capacity of Knight. Yeah, Knight Arena is 12,541. That's 2,500 more seats than Hackett. All right, Illinois. I don't know if they're that quite that high.
Definitely top five.
They might be though, because they're 23rd in attempts percentage, and then they're 15th in pace. So you combine those two stats, that's a lot of 3-point attempts.
A heavy 3-point shooting team. It makes sense, right? It's a good offense. Again, it was kind of fun, right? Like, I didn't know what Illinois did. I didn't know who these players were, right? And then you see them and you're like, oh, okay, all right, I'm learning who I had no idea Kasperis Jakachonis was, right? He's pretty good.
God forbid someone bring him up to you on a podcast.
Well, just wait till next week and I learn who the Michigan State players are.
Well, you'd be very excited when you learn how the Michigan State coaches.
Is it Mateen Cleaves?
I did look this up, by the
I
way.
genuinely thought it was Mateen Cleaves. Okay, wait, it's not Tom Izzo?
It is Tom Izzo. That was the
Okay.
joke. Yes.
Okay.
You're like, wow, the Huskies are going against a real legend. I did look this up. They played him in the Michigan State in the Maui Invitational the year that they were there. I had thought that was the case. In the
We beat them, right?
no,
Who did
lost
we
that one.
Who
Beat
did we beat?
Virginia. Tony
Oh,
Bennett
okay,
had just
Virginia,
gotten
yeah.
there.
It was at least close in the Michigan State
It
game.
was 76-71. Yeah.
Anyway, things are looking up for Husky basketball right now. Like both these games were fun, and the way that they defended the three, maybe part of it was the threes weren't going in, whatever. We'll see how much that's a trend, but their success against the three was pretty impressive. And fighting back in this game, this was an impressive game that UW played. And I think they are in the territory of we could still have moral victories.
Oh, without question.
Danny Sprinkle's first season, like Mike McDonald, no moral victories. Sorry. You don't get moral victories for the Seahawks. Danny Sprinkle gets moral victories.
Look, this
And
team has
they
just
got one
been
on
so
Sunday.
irrelevant for such a long period of time. Like, obviously, there was the Gonzaga win in December
It just
2023, which was
felt
a
so
great moment.
fruitless. It really, like, I weirdly didn't feel the way that I felt about that Gonzaga win. There's sometimes
Well,
having
because
a
you were
win.
worried that it was going to translate into a Mike Hopkins extension.
Partially, for sure. It was good. It was a good win, but it didn't. Sometimes you need those wins in context of building something a little bit bigger.
I mean, contextually, like, it wasn't this big of an upset, but it felt like Mike Hopkins beating Arizona
That was
his
the
first
most
year.
important win of Mike Hopkins' career.
All right, well, the first Midwest road trip is coming up for the Huskies to the Michigan schools. The aforementioned Spartans have won 7 in a row, including their first 3 conference games. Their losses this season are to Kansas in the Champions Classic and Memphis in the Maui semifinals. They are number
Wow, did
18 in
they even
KenPom.
play in the Akershire Classic?
I
Akershire
should
Invitational?
have. A great question. Number 10 in
Prepared.
adjusted defensive efficiency. Not a lot of huge names necessarily on this team. I mean, certainly not for someone like you who doesn't watch college basketball. Will there be any players you really
I can name like one
recognize?
college basketball player outside of Huskies and people that I saw this weekend. So,
Who? You can't name.
Cooper Flagg.
Okay.
That's the one. That's player. That
You can't even name the Rutgers guys?
literally no idea. I didn't even.
Wow.
The fact that there are Rutgers guys is shocking information to
Well,
me.
they're coming to town. That's one I'm gonna get out to
Wow, I maybe should have bought $10 tickets to that one.
heck head for. Their most notable NBA prospect coming off the bench, I believe, is Jace Richardson, the son of former Michigan State legend Jason Richardson.
Wow. Who the hell is Kevin Pelton?
Oh, that is a great question. It looks like his statistical projection is going to be very good. So maybe they'll be asking who the hell is Kevin Pelton. He'll be asking who the hell is Kevin Pelton from a positive standpoint.
There we go.
67% on twos this year, 48% on threes for Jace Richardson. But notably, his younger brother, Jackson Richardson,
Okay.
is a 2026 recruit. Michigan State is not listed as having offered him, which is
Wow.
bizarre. But you know who is listed as having offered him?
There we go.
University of Washington.
Stop telling you, Sprinkle's got aura.
Okay. If he goes and pulls Jackson Richardson.
He's the kind of coach. My number one concern about Danny Sprinkle right now is not whether he'll be successful. I'm like, well, his dad played football here, right?
Yes.
They might be able to keep Danny Sprinkle. I don't know. I'm like, if things go well, I feel like this might be a stepping stone for Danny Sprinkle.
I mean, it could be certainly. I think you have a better chance with Danny Sprinkle than generic coach who you hired in the same situation.
No. They definitely should, but you just see Danny Sprinkle and you're like, if he could get this going, he could be a dude. He could be one of those college, like that he just kind of he has the college basketball coach look and energy or something. I was like, Danny Sprinkle could be the guy.
Michigan
We'll
State
see.
has a freshman, redshirt freshman guard named Garrig Normand.
Okay.
He's named after sports stars for both his first and middle names. Obviously, Lou Gehrig. His middle name is Rivers. Would you care to guess who he's named after?
Phil Rivers?
You bet.
There we go. Garrick Rivers Norman?
These are the nuggets you are only getting on the Pelton Cast.
Wow. I knew we'd reach the time that people started naming their children after Phil Rivers.
And not just Phil Rivers. He has many children. That was the joke.
Yes.
Right, Michigan.
Do
The
you think?
Huskies.
There have to be other children named after Luca Toni.
Yes, unquestionably.
He won a World Cup. Phil Rivers couldn't even win a fucking AFC championship.
Wow, put some respect on Phil
No,
Rivers'
I
name.
love Phil Rivers. You know I love Phil Rivers. I'd
I
take him
know.
right now. If it was like, hey, Phil Rivers is going to be the Seahawks quarterback next year, I'd be like, okay, I'd like to see it.
I'm intrigued. All right, that game is Thursday at 5 p.m. at Michigan State. On Sunday at 11 a.m., Huskies head over to Ann Arbor to take on Michigan, who is number 10 in KenPom under new coach Dusty May, who notably took Florida Atlantic to the Final Four. I don't know if you know that's a thing that happened.
Nope.
Wolverines have 3 losses all away from home, none to ranked teams, but all by 3 points or fewer. They've started 4-0 in Big Ten play with a pair of double-digit wins at the LA schools over the weekend. They lead the nation by shooting 63% on twos, and I'm very curious to watch the 7-foot duo of Danny Wolf and Vladislav Golden, the latter of whom followed May from Florida Atlantic. Both are shooting nearly 70% on twos. Wolf is the power forward on offense. These two guys start together, who leads the team in assist rate and frequently runs pick and rolls with his fellow 7-footer,
Oh my
Vlad Golden.
God. All right.
So
See,
the
this
Huskies
should
will
we
go
get in
up
the
against
Big
that
Ten?
with great Osabar and Wilhelm
Yeah,
Brandenbaum.
not feeling great about that one.
And maybe some KC Ibekwe minutes in this one.
Yikes. Yeah, it's one you wouldn't mind having Frank Kepnog.
Yep.
This is a loss. Come on. They got no chance in this game. This is an 0-2 weekend, but if the Huskies play well in both games, they could keep it close. Like if they were in it at the end, similar, like I probably asking too much for it to be similar to the Illinois game, but
Right.
they can pick up some moral victories in both of these. I mean, this is probably the hardest road trip in the Big Ten.
That's a great question. I mean, in terms of like both of the teams being good, I would say that's probably the case.
What are the pairs? Are they doing a similar thing to the Pac-12 of is Maryland and Illinois, is that a tandem of
Maryland and
teams?
Illinois are not a team. When you go on the road, I don't think you necessarily go on the road together, if that makes sense. But we, you know,
But when you're traveling, like
like it's,
UW and Oregon is obviously
yes,
where you're
it's not like
traveling.
UW and Oregon are necessarily playing. I don't think Oregon is playing Michigan and Michigan State this weekend. They might be, but I don't know
Interesting.
that they specifically are. Let me check
I mean,
that.
Northwestern feels like the obvious one.
Yeah, no, they are not. You know, this is just a one-off home game for Michigan and Michigan State. But the travel pairs on the home side for the or the roadside for the Huskies that we know of are, in addition to this, now I guess Minnesota they're playing as a one-off road game.
Okay.
Ohio State and Penn State they're playing together.
Fair enough.
Iowa and Wisconsin they're playing together. Those are their other Midwestern trips.
Okay.
They do not go because Rutgers and Maryland are both coming here. They do not go to east of
Those would be kind of
Pennsylvania,
like the tandem that they would play in a row, though.
presumably.
And then Indiana and like Illinois, Northwestern, Indiana and Iowa?
Well, Purdue would be the other team.
Oh, Purdue, Indiana, Purdue, and then Nebraska and Iowa or something.
Well, we just heard that it's Wisconsin and Iowa this year.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's always going to be the case, but that's how they've apportioned it.
So this has to be up there though. Like of those pairs with both teams being as good as they are.
Assuming that you it's Northwestern that you would play with Illinois, then I think the answer is yes to that question. Because Michigan is the second-rated KenPom team in the conference, and it's pretty close, and Michigan State is third. So yeah, I mean,
It
yeah.
literally cannot be more.
I mean, hypothetically, if you played Iowa and Purdue, I think that would be a more tougher, difficult combined road trip, I suppose.
Yeah, but that would never be the pair,
Or
Iowa
Illinois
and
and
Purdue.
Wisconsin. I don't know. Like, but yeah, this is it.
This is the hardest road trip. Okay. Well, we'll see how they fare. I mean, so far, it was fun to watch Husky basketball, and I have not said that in a very long time.
Agreed. Well, you have said that very recently about Husky football, but let's talk some more about the 2025 team as it continues to take shape. First, a defection on the coaching side that was unexpected. Jacksonville State hired the safety coach, Vinny Sinceri, as defensive coordinator. So he'll only spend 1 year at UW, and that gives a coaching spot for Peyton Waters to work with as he fills out.
Pretty sure Peyton Waters just transferred. So
Yes.
I hope
That's
it's
Husky.
not Peyton. He didn't transfer to being a coach, did he? He entered the transfer portal to go coach UW.
What's the name of UW's
Ryan
defensive coach?
Walters?
Yes.
You said you don't watch college football. I get it.
So that gives another spot for Ryan
Oh, you're
Walters
taking
to.
it out? No, come on. Leave it in. Leave it in. Leave it in. Leave it in.
Okay, Ryan Walters to
There we
fill out his
go.
defensive staff.
What Kevin Bell is wrong one time, and you're like, halt the podcast.
I mean, I've left in some other errors. I left in the FPI efficiency 2023 versus 2024.
Oh boy, gotcha.
All right, the big one.
You're just gonna, I'm never gonna listen, so you're just gonna delete that later. I'll never know.
True, yes. Well,
I have to keep referencing you to make sure that you can't delete.
Too much effort. It's a good point. Yes. Takario Davis, it is official. He is headed to UW after some emoji related concern, which is why it's dangerous reading too much into emojis. He is headed here to join Ephesians Prysock.
You need to say read into emojis. I think it's dangerous to read into anything.
I agree, but particularly emojis.
I don't think there is actually that much emoji related concern. He already, like, this was announced publicly, but over the weekend he got the crystal ball and it was done.
Well, and there was a bunch of pictures on social media of him with UW's coaches. So it all seemed very
not Peyton Waters. Notably missing.
I think I may have already forgotten the defensive coordinator's name. It's not
Ryan
Walters.
Walters.
This is yet another member of Jed Fish's 2022 recruiting class, a whopping 8 of whom have now followed him to UW, including it's amazing how many star players there were that UW has gotten a significant number of its best players from Arizona's 2022 recruiting class and not gotten Tetaroa McGowan and Noah Fifita.
Just play the hits, man. You know what I mean? Like, let's keep it going. It does have me being like, every player comes from Arizona, I'm like, he's a star. He's a star. He's a star. And I'm like, curiously, Arizona was also bad.
Well, it's because of the fact that they didn't have Jed Fish.
I mean, I think there are probably people in Arizona who would actually say that's true, and they might be right.
Was Arizona's defense dramatically different last year? That's a question for FBI that we can answer
there we go.
As we look it up here. Anyways, Davis became a starter as a sophomore, an all Big 10, Big 12 second team pick last season. Was conference defensive player of the week after recording 7 tackles and 5 passes defensed against Utah. And like Prysock, is listed at 6'4". So a lot of size for the Huskies against wide receivers next year.
I think that is going to be an important thing in the Big 10. You know, like the amount of size that you have, because it also factors in down the field, but tackling at the line of scrimmage, you know, it's an underrated aspect. People have obviously talked about this is Pete Carroll's dream, right? These two corners. And Jed Fish, notably in the Pete Carroll tree.
Arizona's defense got at least as bad, maybe more bad than its offense last year. They were 122nd in FBI.
But Jacob Mani was also out
exactly
for most of the year. Yeah. He was the difference.
The linchpin. They were like,
Ephesians was here. Ephesians has to be paired with Takario Davis to be good.
Exactly.
Everybody knows.
Some new players submitting notifications of transfer in the wake of the Sun Bowl. The most notable one. Well, I guess the most notable one is probably Thaddeus Dixon, who we didn't know was going to get an extra year of eligibility. Thought he might go to the NFL, but with the NCAA's ruling on junior college player, he did tell On3 Monday he had 4 finalists, but could also remain at UW. Now, that was before Takario Davis made it official.
I'm here to report Thad Dixon knew on Monday. He wasn't surprised. Thad Dixon, Takario Davis was coming to UW for a while.
I don't think it makes sense to have all three of those players from their standpoints or from an NIL standpoint. Unless you're really convinced that one of them can play nickel.
How dare you? We want Thad Dixon back bad.
If Thad Dixon wants to come back.
Ephesians, Prysock, Thad Dixon, and Takario Davis?
If Thad Dixon wants to come back,
I'd be too many good corners.
I would be thrilled if he came back because he was probably UW's best corner last season.
It does make sense to have Thad Dixon back. Takario Davis has 2 years of eligibility remaining, correct?
No, he has 1.
No. Okay.
Yeah, I mean
that's fine.
That's a position the Huskies are going to be turning over after next season, either way.
And however will you turn over players in college football? They're going to have to get recruiting, huh?
I don't know if it's possible that Thad Dixon could get 2 years of eligibility. I can't remember how long he actually played in junior college.
He should just go to the NFL.
Yeah, he played 2 years. So I guess hypothetically, depending on how this ruling goes, he could have 2 years of eligibility left. So the Huskies did lose their starting nickelback, Jordan Shaw, who is headed to Texas A&M. He followed Jed Fish, was previously at Indiana, transferred to Arizona, then retransferred to UW after Jed Fish's move. This one was a little more surprising.
I just don't get that one. I'm assuming Texas A&M probably paid him more money. Like that's probably what it came down to, is UW had an amount they were able to offer him. I do not think Dakario Davis was cheap. I wish these numbers were public. Like it's so stupid how the transfer, the NIL money has to be behind closed doors or whatever, cryptic or whatever. But Dakario Davis is
I
getting
don't think it
paid.
has to.
No, not that it has to, it just is, right?
I
Like
mean, I don't know whether that's better or worse for players.
we need
Whatever
contracts.
is better or worse for players is what I prefer. I mean, what I think this says is that Alex McLaughlin, who the Huskies previously added is a transfer, is generally listed as a safety. I think they're probably considering playing him in the nickel.
Okay.
Because he's someone who seems like he, I mean, he's got terrific size, seems like he's most effective around the ball. I think that's a really good spot for him. He's the player type I like in the nickel, even more so. Jordan Shaw had a fine season, but is more of, the undersized corner paradigm of the nickel corner as opposed to the hybrid safety slash corner.
It is kind of funny where, like, I don't know if there was really a moment all last season where I was like, oh yeah, Jordan Shaw, you know? And now you get to this time of year and you're like, no, Jordan Shaw, right? It's like Kamori House had basically play all year. Maybe there were a couple more, but we're like,
That's
yeah.
not fair. Kamori House was really, and Jordan Shaw was obviously very involved. It's just like, quarterbacks, you're probably noticing more often when something goes wrong than when something goes right.
When it's funny because I do love Efficient's Pry Sock, but there are a lot of times that it kind of went wrong. We'll see though. Has to be paired to Cario. Everybody knows. The quality of most, like you were talking about Alex McLaughlin, Jordan Shaw, most of these players is probably negligible. They're probably all about the same as far as talent goes. Like there's not a massive difference. There probably isn't a massive difference between Dakario Davis, and I think Dakario Davis is an NFL player. I'm not sure about that, Dixon. There isn't necessarily a massive difference between the two. You know, going into next year, somebody will probably play better than somebody else. I don't think you can confidently predict who. The thing about the transfer portal is things get shuffled a lot. People end up, the good thing about it is that it spreads talent around to a lot of different places. But a lot of times, and it gets people on the field playing football more than being backup somewhere. In the end, I don't think it's so clear cut as. You know, like people were pointing to, there's like an on three thing about remaining players in the portal. And it was like Jacario's number two, Thad Dixon's number three, or whatever. One of those players is going to have a better season next year, and no one knows who it's going to be.
Yeah, always
So
bet on randomness.
the most important thing is adding experienced players, and that is what has happened. Experienced players generally are better than inexperienced players. That's basically it. The more experienced players you can have, the better off you're going to be. It's difficult to pinpoint any individual player and be like, that's the player, right? Even Jonah Coleman. Jonah Coleman had a good year, but I don't think that Jonah Coleman had the kind of season that we anticipated Jonah Coleman could have had. And it was kind of interesting. I was thinking about Jonah in terms of, I think Damon is going to open things up for Jonah a lot next year, but it was almost like Jonah Coleman is a little bit de-emphasized in the offense after DeMond became the starting quarterback.
I mean, Oregon focused completely on taking him away. Against Louisville, it seemed like there was a desire to get a number of different younger players involved as well.
Kind of. I mean, it wasn't that big of a difference.
I mean,
He
certainly the
just,
fact that, yeah, I guess they just didn't run the ball that much.
I mean, a lot of the running is now going to be DeMond running. Like, it is a difference, but if they can figure it out. And similar to like the Ravens, right, with Lamar, like we talked about, if Jonah Coleman can be that Derrick Henry player and get holes that are much bigger because people have to account for Damon Williams, that could be huge for him. But it did feel like, you know, again, apples to apples, is Jonah Coleman that much better than Dylan Johnson or somebody? I don't know, right? A lot of times these players are all about the same.
Everything is fine. Some additional transfers for the Huskies, which is pretty much inevitable. They, are over the 85 scholarships that Jed Fish had said they'd like to stay at, even though they can go up to 105 with the NCAA's settlement. Edge Jaden Wayne, the Tacoma native who transferred in from Miami, didn't earn consistent playing time at a position hit hard by injury. So
I've literally never heard of this person.
No surprise that he's moving on. Wide receiver Jason Robinson Jr., who was a 2024 recruit and redshirted last season, did not after not seeing any action.
Also,
and
never, then never heard of him.
Another 2024 recruit, Peyton Waters.
What? Who, the defensive coordinator?
Who committed to Kalen DeBoer, stayed through the coaching change, saw action in all 13 teams games last season, but primarily on special teams. So there you go.
I promise to panic about each and every one of them.
Definitely the appropriate move. Mm-hmm. All right, Seahawks. We talked a lot about them.
Well, I just want to say first, we shouldn't gloss over this. Chet Fish went out and got a top 10 player in the transfer portal in Dakario Davis overall. And again, like I mentioned, there's not necessarily that big a difference between number 10 and number 50 in the transfer portal, probably. But the fact that he went out and did it, I understand he had a relationship with Dakario already. But going out and making that play along with Jacob Bonu and the others that they have already gotten, right? The Jonte Cook from Texas. This was an awesome year for Jed in the transfer portal right now. And he definitely proved that this is something, this isn't coming off like a massive UW season or anything like that. There's hope and there's potential, but this feels like just the beginning of what he's able to build. So I'm excited about this. And I think there's still more to go. Like there's more attrition that's probably going to happen, at least a couple of players.
Yeah,
so
you'll see things shake loose after spring practice.
We haven't seen anybody come from the Ryan Walters tree at all. And I'm fascinated to see if there will be anything there. There's just been so much from Jed that I would be surprised if there weren't at least a player from Purdue who came over.
Probably. But I mean, it's worth remembering, it's not just Jed Fish. It's also a lot of these position coaches. So for example, John Richardson, the cornerback coach, who worked with both Prysock and yes. Davis at Arizona. All right. Mike McDonald met the media on Tuesday after we recorded with Ben Baldwin about the Seahawks season and clarified a few additional things. Said the Seahawks already have interview requests in for their offensive coordinator position. There will not be any internal candidates for that job. Said the play calling experience is not a requirement. And asked about possible additional offensive staff changes, said, "We want our new coordinator to feel like they have a lot of influence in their staff, so we might have some movement, and then when that happens, and we might not, we'll kind of go through the process and figure it out as we go." I also thought this was notable, but not for the reason he wanted it to be. He was asked about his level of involvement in choosing the offensive coordinator and said, "I was 100% involved last time. I'll be 100% involved this time." Was asking whether you were involved. The question is, did you make the decision, and will you make the decision this time? That's what we want to know. Okay.
I guess we don't know the answer. I my gut tells me that by saying I was 100% involved last time and this time, the answer is no to both of those.
That's the sense I get.
Like John Schneider has a lot of power in this organization.
I mean, maybe Mike McDonald is not parsing the language as much as we are. Obviously, he walked back to some degree, not walked back his Geno Smith answer, but expanded upon his Geno Smith answer that was much discussed.
I think he was like, wow, I phrased this slightly wrong. And the thing is, when you're a coach, a lot of people pay attention to the things. This is the thing he has to learn, right? Pete Carroll was very good at speaking to the media. Pete Carroll understood what to give and what not to give. Generally, it was a rare situation that Pete Carroll stepped on his own toes.
Yes. Lastly, Mike Kafka, potential Seahawks offensive coordinator, is
you're
interviewing.
Way too excited about this. Okay,
I'm not excited about it. He's
just because you boldly predicted it doesn't mean it's good. We don't necessarily. What has Mike Kafka done that you're that excited?
That's why
about?
I'm surprised he's interviewing for head coaching jobs.
So many people are interviewing for head coaching jobs. I would not. Mike Kafka is not
sure.
going to be hired. They just want a Kafka F coordinator. Kafka esque. Did I say F?
you did say that, technically speaking. I don't. I'm just like, how many of those people are the offensive coordinator for a team that finished 28th? In offensive DVOA,
I mean, maybe just a former affiliation with Patrick Mahomes is enough. I think if Mike Kafka wasn't a semi-notable quarterback in college, he probably doesn't get this interview.
I suppose. I don't know. It's just like, it's wild the coaches
Is
that
there
can consider head coaching candidates.
any Clay Kubiak conversation for offensive coordinator in Seattle? Have you seen that anywhere?
Clint Kubiak?
Clay Kubiak.
Okay, Clay Kubiak just got promoted to offensive coordinator apparently in San Francisco, so no.
But he's not getting play calling duty.
Yeah, but he wouldn't accept that promotion if he was thinking about going somewhere else.
Okay,
Or
fair
I
enough.
mean, I guess he might. I don't know. Maybe he wouldn't have a choice in it, but that's my position.
Okay.
Clint Kubiak's still under contract apparently to the Saints, so it'll be interesting to see how they handle that. Is
But
they
haven't
search for a new
seen
head coach?
anything about who. We just need a Kubiak. Okay. Anyone.
I don't know that I necessarily
As long
believe
as their
that.
first name starts with a K, weirdly.
The Saints, one of the teams that Mike Kafka is interviewing with, the Bears are the other. I mean, obviously Pete Carroll's got that job
Yeah.
locked up.
No, I think Ben Johnson's the Bears. I think it's Vrabel Patriots, and I think Ben Johnson is the Bears, and I think Pete Carroll is your Raiders head coach, like I said.
You're willing to make that a bold prediction?
Sure, I guess so. No, I don't know. Pete Carroll could be the head coach of the Bears. I would be pretty surprised if. I think Ben Johnson need. You hate when people say need. Why two people whose names should have started with C, but they started with K? Their dad's name is Gary. It's not like they're continuing in a like tradition or something like
I
that.
mean, they're starting one, apparently.
They're starting one. They're like, yeah, names that normally would start with C, we're going to spell them with a K. And those people are all going to be the offensive coordinator of the Seattle Seahawks.
His other son,
What is their name?
Klein Kubiak?
It is not actually
100% is.
Klein.
Yes.
Well, that shouldn't start with a C. That just isn't a name.
It's unclear what he's doing right now. Let me Google that. Klein Kubiak is
It's on the Cowboys staff, is that right?
in their personnel department.
All right, bring him over.
Make him offensive coordinator.
It's just, I love that Gary and Rhonda were like, I don't know.
Need the KKs.
Clint, Clay, and Klein. It doesn't make me feel great, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. But anyway, okay, that makes sense on Clay Kubiak. I agree with you that he probably wouldn't have taken the promotion had he been looking. But it's also something that, like, he called plays in game this last. He called plays on Sunday, notably Clay Kubiak, and it's like maybe you could call plays in all of the games. But I do think that job is a it's a means to an end for probably a head coaching job rather than the offensive coordinator. So I would probably want to stay in the Shanahan tree for now rather than replacing a coach who was fired after one season. Like I wonder how much that factors into this decision if you're one of if you're Tanner Engstrom or somebody like that. Tanner Engstrom probably going to hang around and end up being the Lions offensive coordinator if Ben Johnson leaves, but if you're somebody who is a hot offensive coordinator candidate, if you kind of factor in, I think the, most people who are in those positions are pretty confident in their own abilities to be offensive coordinators, is my guess. But they're not looking
I
at
think
it
you got
as
to
like.
answer yourself the question, am I willing to run the ball?
But
If
no,
the answer is yes, then you're probably okay.
Ryan Grubb just wouldn't.
I
I
mean,
love the idea that Mike McDonald's like, could we just run a couple? And Ryan's like, no. I love that. He's like me playing Madden. I love it.
I believe it was Corbin Smith who had the report about this.
There was a thing that said basically, I don't think it was like, are you ever willing to run the ball? It was like, if there is a decision to be made, oftentimes Ryan Grubb made a different decision than Mike McDonald would have.
I don't know that Ryan Grubb necessarily did the wrong thing in a lot of these situations. The
No,
Huskies, the Seahawks were not good at running the football.
I mean, I don't, again, I said this on the podcast with Ben Baldwin. I don't want an offensive coordinator who's going to run the ball more. I want an offensive coordinator who's going to pass the ball more effectively. Like,
And run the ball more effectively.
And run the ball more effect. Like I, it's hard to parse exactly. Like I don't. Maybe it's because of Ryan Grubb that they didn't run the ball effectively. I don't think it is, but it's probably more on the offensive line, but not enough Kenny McIntosh.
I mean, I suppose if we talk about kind of those schematic issues of, the runs looked too disconnected from the play action passes, that would probably hurt both your running game and your play action passing game.
I think the Mike McDonald quote, though, or whatever, I don't know if it wasn't a quote, it was a behind the scenes chatter, is more outcome based thinking, though, and than it is because the offense was bad. The offense, but it wasn't bad. The offense wasn't as good as it probably should have been.
I think the offense was bad.
Are we willing to call it bad?
I am.
Okay. Because the offense was bad, that quote can happen where it's like, oh, Ryan Grubb thought totally different than Mike McDonald. Mike McDonald would have done everything different. Every play that they ran, he would have passed, and vice versa. You know what I mean? It's like Mike McDonald could say that in the end because the offense was bad, but there's a
But
reality
I think
that.
if you would have told Mike McDonald before the season that the Seahawks were going to run the ball as little as they did, I think he would have
He's the head
preemptively.
coach. Who could be in charge of this? He is ultimately Ryan Grubb's boss. It's not like Ryan Grubb's out there just being like, no, we're passing. Mike McDonald's like, please run. And he's like, never. This is such a
I've seen he
stupid
fired
thing.
him. Like I, that's what he—that's what he
But
does.
do it
Him.
mid-season. Fix the offense, Mike McDonald.
I think that's where there's a difference between Mike McDonald as a first-year head coach
He
and
had
Pete
no, I'm
Carroll.
sorry. This is fucking bullshit. Like, this is giving too much credit to Mike McDonald. He is the
I
head
know I'm
coach.
giving less
Head
credit to Mike
coach.
McDonald. He wants to do the wrong thing. But I'm saying the idea that this is just an explanation for the Seahawks offense not being like they weren't dramatically worse than you could have realistically expected. They were like 10% worse than you should have expected. So I don't think this the offensive performance itself was bad enough to warrant Ryan firing Ryan Grubb. I think that the philosophical differences are legitimate.
I think philosophical differences is a way to explain shit didn't go right, so I fired Ryan Grubb.
I mean that if that's the logic, then they wouldn't have fired Ryan Grubb if they made the
They wouldn't have. They would not have. They
playoffs.
Ryan
Sounds
Grubb
like
is the
Mike
offensive
Miller.
coordinator of the Seahawks if they make the playoffs. If the
Okay,
Cardinals
well
cut out to ever make.
that's a great thing to say because you never can prove it wrong or right.
I said this during like week 7, week 10, something like that.
That's good for you. Again, you're not Mike McDonald.
All right. I
This
am
is
very
very
confident.
strange hill to die on.
It's not a hill to die on. It's fine. I just think people are giving Mike McDonald a little too much. They're like, oh, Mike McDonald, the offense would have been amazing with his
And
offensive coordinator.
no, we're giving him less credit. This is a bad thing for Mike
Okay.
McDonald. You don't see this? Ben tweeted, posted this on Blue Sky with there are red flags all over this interview.
Okay. All right. I can't get
So.
that. Quitting Twitter was just so, I'm not into scrolling anymore.
Well, I'm glad you've advanced to that point.
I'm not saying that I'm advanced. I just, it's not that I dislike Blue Sky. I bring it up occasionally, but I used to just pull up Twitter so often. It's like a habit, and I'm not in the habit of Blue Sky.
You know what I really enjoyed when before this podcast, you were like, what are we going to talk about? Do we have anything to talk about this week? And then in your third hour of talking about how much you love Damond Williams Jr. and
Oh my God, you don't even like Damond Williams now?
I
All
like
you
him. I
care
just
about is Husky defensive coordinator Peyton Waters?
I just think I can express it in a more succinct fashion.
Never. There are not enough words to talk about Damond
Maybe
Williams. How dare you?
this podcast has philosophical differences. It's not because of the quality, because the quality is great.
On that note,
Thanks for listening. So I've been thinking a lot about this concept that time is the biggest hater, and I really think it's the best concept you've ever come up with.
really?
Oh yeah, that's definitely true.
I mean, I feel like somebody's come up with this concept before me. I don't, I
I'm sure.
definitely did
I believe
not.
Dave Chappelle sort of came up with it.
Wait, when? Time
The
haters?
time haters.
But
I
no,
mean,
that's different. That is a different thing.
I
I do
understand.
not.
That's a joke.
I just, it's literally as one of the world's greatest haters, I like to fancy myself at least. It's a thing that I've done personally. Like there are people who like have things or whatever. Sometimes you have to just have to accept it or whatever. But there's people where I'm like, that's fucking bullshit that that happened. And then you wait a couple of years and you're like, that person's gone now. It was actually so funny. Luca was looking at a child. He was like, this is how, I'll just even name names. He was like, this is how like a new level hitting lesson goes. And he showed the kid. Again, these are children we're talking about. So I had to hate.
Why? Why? Please don't.
Anyway, he was like talking about it because he was just coming from a hitting lesson. And I'm like, and he's like, look at it. And I'm like, that swing's terrible. And he's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, look at his hands. Look at his weight forward. I did the fucking, it was the Instagram stories. And I was tapping each and just holding it to show him. I'm like, his weight is forward here, right there. I'm like, his hands are horrible here. And I'm just like, that's how you hate. And he was like, the kid's fine. And I'm like, that's not what we're talking about. I'm like, you don't stop hating. You're not like, Matt Stafford's good now. You know what I mean? You don't say that Ichiro's a good player. You hate till the end. You hate to completion. So until they sign Roki Sasaki, one way or the other. But I was like,
I'm not holding my breath on that one. I guess that announcement's coming next week.
Oh, no, is it?
January 15th is the start of the period when he can officially sign.
Okay, interesting. But that's the thing. When you maintain the hate long enough, you're always right, too. If you give it up, then you're wrong. Because if you hate long enough, all of a sudden you get a Peyton Manning noodle arm like Super Bowl or whatever. You know what I mean?
So I was thinking about this in the context of the movie A Complete Unknown, which
okay,
it seems...
I've hated on that movie. Haven't seen it. Hated on it.
As a spoiler alert, it probably overstates the negative reaction to Dylan going electric at the Newport Folk Festival.
You think it overstates? It's like one of the most notable... I actually feel like the response to it is like... So it's probably apocryphal at this point.
That's what I'm saying, yes.
Yeah.
But hating on Dylan going electric really poorly.
No, those were some all-time haters. You gotta love it.
You're siding with the haters here.
Well, I'm just saying, if you were a hater, that's like an epic hate moment. I think you have to respect it at the very least.
Ah, this is a different direction because I was going with like...
No, I'm not siding with the haters. Like, obviously, Bob Dylan's music became way better after this. You know what I mean? But if you waited long enough, Bob Dylan's music got way worse too. That's the thing. Time is the greatest hater, because you might be like, yeah, Blood on the Tracks is good, but did you hear the last five records?
I don't even know. Is anyone aware of the last five records?
I don't. There's always like a Bob Dylan comeback. It's like classic Bob Dylan. And you're like, no, sorry. I remember they were saying that there was a scene.
Even I don't put it in my top 10 of the year.
I think there was a record called Out of Tune that came out, and I want to say like 1994. And I remember like seeing a thing about it where it's like, return the form for Bob Dylan. It's just like, when you have so much, or Time Out of Mind was the record. I'm sure it's fine. I'm not going to say it's bad. I'm sure it was fine. But like in the year 20, whatever it was, there's so much other Bob Dylan music to listen to that a like random return to form Bob Dylan record is kind of like, we're good. I guess you could say the same about The Rising, and we still ride for The Rising. But
how often
today are you pulling out The Rising?
I don't know when the last time was, but it still held up the last time I listened to it.
No, it holds up, but like you're not listening to it. Like every summer when I'm listening to Bruce, I'm not like, hey, kids, check this out, right?
Right.
There's like six other Bruce records to literally the first six Bruce records you would listen to before The Rising.
I don't know if that's necessarily true.
You don't think that's necessarily true?
I mean, I haven't gone through and ordered them. If I necessarily say all six of those are better than The Rising, there are moments on The Rising I really like.
Yeah, no, they're good moments. But that's the thing. There's also other things to hate about.
But I think you're not focusing on, like, they were so convinced in the moment, like, wow, Bob Dylan, what a traitor. Everyone is going to remember this is the moment that Bob Dylan ruined his career.
Look, I've been wrong with my hate also. I can't even tell you the amount of bands that I've been like, yeah, that band is cool, but they'll never have fans. And I didn't try to sign them. And let me tell you, they have fans. In hindsight, do you know who has egg on their face? It's me.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
I was wrong.
But give it enough time and you will in fact be right.
That's true. That is true. You think that movie's good though? I literally did an impression. I was telling Jan, I don't know. Like, I've always hated biopics in general. The only one that I'm like, I think I'm okay with is the Anthony Bourdain one.
They are not my favorite biopics. I have issues with them.
What is the name of the Queen one again?
I forget what the name of it is. But yes, it was so popular. I mean, we are really in a
Is
golden
it
age of
called
musician
Bohemian
biopic.
Rhapsody? They didn't
Yeah,
actually call it
it
that,
is
did
called that,
they?
yeah.
They called it Bohemian Rhapsody. That,
You know that there are the
Christ.
four
Jan loved
interlock.
it. Jan loved it, though.
Oh, she went like three times. Do you, maybe more than that, do you know that there are the four interlocking Beatles biopics coming? Are you
Oh,
aware
do
of this
I? It's tied
situation?
up all of the young actors in Hollywood. Every white man in Hollywood is tied up now because of the Beatles biopic.
I like that you said this as if you're trying to manage the young white men of
No, no,
Hollywood.
no. But literally, I work at a company that makes films,
Oh, I guess
and
that's
this is like
true,
affecting the like it's
yeah.
like the film industry. All the whites are tied up.
What will we do? What will we do?
I've already pre-hated on that. It's just like, wow, this is ripe. Nobody's talked about the Beatles before. They're like,
You know about the Springsteen biopic, right?
are you fucking kidding me?
Okay.
Who do you think I am?
I
I've
just
even
wanted to
hated on
share.
that. Although I'm for Jeremy Allen White. I feel like he kind of has Bruce energy. It's the only
I
one.
don't
But like,
know. Chalamet did a remarkable job as Bruce Springsteen, I'll say.
I'm now weirdly pro
Springsteen is
as
Bob
Springsteen.
Dylan.
He could play him too.
I mean, I wouldn't put it past Chalamet.
I'm pro Timmy Chalamet. I don't think I've seen a single music movie
But
that I have enjoyed.
did Chalamet pick the Husky game when he was on? I don't believe so, right?
Were we playing?
Oh yeah, we were. No, it was December.
It was conference championship week, right?
Yeah.
That he was on. I like Almost Famous. There are music movies that I
But
like.
Almost Famous isn't a biopic.
No,
That's
I'm saying
precisely what
any
makes it
music.
so great.
Yeah. Fever Dog. That's what we're about over here.
I like original stories, even if they are loosely based on real stories. At least when you fictionalize the fictional stories, it's not like rewriting history.
The We Will Rock You, like I was literally doing the impression of it for Jan in the car. I don't know why I was on just one of my all-time hate modes. And Jan was
Well,
of
I don't
course
know
talking
why I
about
was
Great
hating
Love.
on things. I consider myself one of the world's foremost haters.
So anyway, I was hating.
I mean, it was a
And then
Tuesday.
I brought it up to an artist the other day, and she was like, I've like referenced that scene in that movie so many times, as like the people think that's how music happens.
I've never seen Bohemian Rhapsody, so I don't
Oh,
even
you
get what
haven't?
you're referencing. That's
Oh,
the
it's
beauty of it. But
hilarious.
yes, I take your point.
They are actually hilarious. But yeah, man, I'm excited to learn more about the Beatles. I just feel like
A very
hasn't
covered
been
topic.
covered, right? Bob Dylan, dude, there's nowhere to go for information about Bob Dylan. Thanks, Timmy.
The thing is, I don't know that I really knew the Dylan origin story necessarily, but really it was a great like moment for Joan Baez, who is like is I know who she is, but I couldn't really have told you anything specific about her. And then her portrayal in the movie by Monica Barbaro caused me to go out and search out, listen to Joan Baez the last few days. So that's been successful on that count.
Wow. That's dope that this Bob Dylan biopic has let you discover one of the most popular artists of all time.
I'm fully aware. I'm just saying.
The 20 million records that she sold wasn't good enough.
Don't know how many of those she sold in the past 25 years
I bet
necessarily.
a
I
lot of
mean,
people
still, probably
watched.
still a
She
lot.
literally performed at the Grammys last year. It's like a
I don't know what to tell you. That's just the situation.
All right. Well, ESPN's Kevin Pelton needs a Bob Dylan biopic to discover Joan Baez.
Well, she didn't go electric, so I didn't find out about her.
This is really just a critique of Joan Baez not going electric. Here we are.
On that note.
I legitimately remember being on a call with the TikTok people right away. It was all emotive. And the TikTok people, and just being like, this shit. They were like, yeah, it's like building on Musical.ly. And I was like, no one fucking cares about this thing or whatever. I literally like remember getting off the phone and being like, well, that was a waste of time. So I'm not saying that I haven't been wrong. I feel like I've been the most wrong, but If you wait long enough by January, whatever, you might be right.
Okay, on that note,
are we starting? This can't be the beginning of the podcast.
This is the end.
No. Oh.